everybody, and welcome to our parenting session, Understanding Your Child's Behaviour in Lockdown and Beyond. I'm Barbara Langham, and this is my colleague Sarah Allen. We are both family support workers for Embrace at Alcolet. We work one-to-one with families and also run several different parenting courses. As we are unable to run live sessions at the moment, we have put together a presentation to hopefully help you to continue the development of your positive relationship with your child, and to help them develop and manage their behaviour in a constructive and non-hurtful way. It will also provide practical strategies for coping with difficult behaviour. During this difficult time, you will probably be spending more time together than usual, and the stress of events and being cooped up together can make parenting a struggle at times. It is probable that none of us have experienced anything like this before, and it's therefore even more important that we maintain a secure, familiar environment for our children. Before we look at some of the things that we can do that might help, let's start by having a look back at the things that might have happened in the past that may have encouraged unwanted behaviour to continue.
Thanks, Barbs. So we're just going to consider now some of the things that maybe have happened in the family that have kind of encourage behaviour that we haven't wanted to carry on. But first of all, before we look at some things in the family environment, it's worth remembering about genetic makeup with your children. So just in the same way as, you know, somebody might say, oh, your son or your daughter looks so like you or your partner, so they inherit temperaments from us as well. So some children might want a lot of attention and like to be with others. Some children might find it hard to cope with change, and these things can be difficult to manage at times. It's also worth remembering about health, things like illness, and then just everyday things like hunger and tiredness can always affect behaviour, and it's just worth bearing that in mind. So if you're finding, for example, that you're always hitting a troubling period at, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe you want to think about mealtimes. Have they had a snack? Do they need a snack? Do you need to bring tea forward? If a child's hungry and you're always noticing a pattern, it may be that you want to move things around. And in the same way, if a child's unwell and they've got a cold and perhaps glue ear, and they're, you know, starting to not respond to what you're saying or instructions, and you think, why are they ignoring me? It's worth thinking, could there be a problem with hearing and getting that checked out? But things that largely shape the way that our children develop is the family environment. And that's really what happens in the family environment is important. And it is something that we can control to a degree and control what they learn from us. Sometimes we all unwittingly behave in a way that encourages unwanted behaviour to be repeated. We talk about these on our course as accidental rewards for misbehaviour. And there's various ways that we might in the past have rewarded this unwanted behaviour. So a key one is giving attention, giving a lot of attention to the unwanted behaviour. We talk more about this in detail later on today, but if children learn that the quickest way to get our attention is to misbehave, then we're going to get more of that. Equally, we might have smiled or laughed when a child has done something that we didn't like, because let's face it, it is funny at times, things that children do. But if it's a behaviour that we don't want repeated and we have laughed at it, that's a very mixed message for a child. Children are very keen to please us. If they've had a positive reaction, in as much as we've laughed or smiled, they will repeat that behaviour. So we need to be careful that we're not doing that, and, you know, perhaps just have to take ourselves off if we find something funny, but we don't actually want it to happen again. In the same way, spending a lot of time reasoning with a child is again giving attention to the unwanted behaviour. I remember a dad telling us on one of the courses that he used time out for his child, but he actually spent the whole of time out talking to the child about why they needed to stay in time out. And obviously, again, for your child, they've got your attention, so that may encourage them to continue. And then something again that we may do is give some sort of material reward to a child. So it could be a toy or food to keep quiet. Now, we're all for rewards when a child has behaved in a wanted way, but we're talking about giving them, you know, so they're behaving badly, you're going around the supermarket and they're kicking and screaming or begging for something, you say, okay, have that. And that's a reward for behaving in a bad way rather than rewarding them for the way you want. Another thing that can happen or may have happened in the past, and I certainly remember this with my children, is something that we call the escalation trap. And this is when a child escalates. So they get louder or they cry, they start screaming, pestering what they want. So for example, they might say just before dinner, can I have a biscuit? And you say no. And then it escalates, I want a biscuit, please give me a biscuit. It's higher and higher. And either you finally give in, and I know I've done that, and you say, oh, for goodness sake, yes, okay, have that biscuit. Or you then lose your temper and you start yelling back. And what a child learns from that is either that they've got to keep escalating and they'll get what they want eventually, or you're only serious when you start shouting. And therefore, next time they're likely to carry on that way, either to try and get what they want or they think you're only serious when you start shouting. Okay, so with the escalation trap, the important thing is that we don't end up either giving in with the biscuit, for example, or that we don't end up shouting, because as we said, what our child then learns from that is, well, that's what I've got to do to behave. So the way to manage that is when your child is escalating, for example, using the same example with the biscuit, that you just ignore it. So you might make a statement such as, I've said no biscuit because it's nearly tea time. And then you simply ignore any subsequent behaviour. Equally, you don't start shouting yourself. So you just remain calm and ignore the escalation behaviour.
Can I just come in there a bit?
Yes.
And just say, through the courses that we've done in the past, we can genuinely tell you that there are children who honestly believe that this is the way to get sweets when they're in the supermarket. This is the way to get what they want. They genuinely don't know any other way, and see nothing wrong in escalating the volume and the tantrum to get what they want, because they think that is the way to do it, because mum's always giving in eventually. This is the way it works. I ask, she says no, I shout, I jump up and down, I scream, and then I get what I want. And there's nothing wrong with that behaviour because it's always happened like that.
Mm. Yeah, thanks, Barbs. And then sort of finally, and again, we do talk more about this, but another thing that we may do, again, I know that I did this, is ignoring good behaviour. So if we don't pay enough attention when a child's behaving well, it's likely that that sort of good behaviour is less likely to happen again. Children may learn that the only way that they can get attention is to misbehave. We talk more about that later. How else do children sort of learn how to behave? Well, watching others. So children learn a lot by watching others, and most particularly us as their parents, and particularly now at the moment when we're spending so much time together. So if children see others, if children see other people when they get angry, if they start yelling and shouting, then that's how they learn to behave. You know, they think, oh, okay, that's what you do when you get angry. In one of the other courses we run called the Nurturing Programme, we do an exercise where we talk, first of all, with parents about, you know, when you get angry, how do you behave? And obviously we join in as well. And so the answers that we often get about, you know, how do you behave when you feel angry? We get shouting, slamming doors, throwing things. I can remember one dad saying, I hit the wall. And, you know, that's how they behave when they're angry. And then a little bit later in the session, we ask them how they'd like their children to behave when they get angry. And they say, well, we'd like them to take some time out, or we'd like them to talk to me calmly. And it's quite an eye opener for all of us when we kind of look at the two things that we've put up. One saying, this is how we behave when we're angry, shouting, slamming. And this is how we want our children to behave. Calmly speak to me, take some time out. So it's kind of just worth remembering that we are our children's biggest teachers. They learn a huge amount from us, and we need to be careful about what we're modelling to them. Okay, moving on, thinking now about when we perhaps give an instruction to a child and they don't respond, or they respond in a different way, and we instantly think, oh, they're so naughty, or they're, why aren't they doing what I've said? But it's worth thinking about, actually, have we been clear about what our instructions were? So we might have given too many instructions. So, you know, the typical thing that I think of is saying to your child in the morning something like, go upstairs, clean your teeth, get dressed, put your school clothes on, and remember, it's, you know, you need to take your book bag with X, Y and Z in, and then come downstairs and put your shoes on. That's an awful lot of instructions for a child. They might remember the first one and then they think, right, that's it. And then they'll start playing because they've given up. They can't remember the first one. So they might make it upstairs. They might even clean their teeth. And then you come up and find them playing in their bedroom and get rather cross. So be aware, is it too many instructions? You know, you're more likely setting up your child to fail, for example. But equally, do we give too few instructions? So we might think we know what we mean, but actually, is it clear? I think, Barbs, you've got a good story about that one, haven't you, from the video?
Yeah, it's probably not terribly relevant in today's current climate, but the mum's going past the bedroom door of a five-year-old child who's playing on her bed, and she says, get your things together, we're going to grandma's. And she comes back 10 minutes later and the child has all the toys that she owns, all her teddies, all in a big pile on the bed.
All the clothes out of the wardrobe.
All the clothes out of the wardrobe, all the little pictures off the wall and everything, because that's what mum said. Get your things together, we're going to grandma's. She didn't say that she wanted her to just get something together to take to play with whilst they were visited for half an hour or something, but so she put it all together on a big pile. And mum responded by, don't be silly. And that comes up a little bit later in this, as to how we respond to what the children do when they do something wrong.
Mm. Yeah, thanks, Bobs. That always makes me, I quite like that story, because I think it is a really good illustration. You know, mum knew what she meant in her mind, and it wasn't unreasonable. But of course, to a child, mum said, get your things together. So yeah, think, are we being clear? Are the instructions that we're giving too hard? You know, that you have to think about realistic expectations, and we talk about that again. But if we're asking a child to do something that really, you know, is too hard for them to do, then it's not going to happen. Bad timing. We often talk about this quite a lot in courses. So for children, play is incredibly important. It is kind of their world and it's how they learn. To us, they're just playing. So your child might be on the floor with a big box of Lego and you suddenly think, oh, we haven't got any milk, we need to go out to the shops. And you say, right, come on, we've got to pop out and get some milk. And the child has a meltdown or refuses. Try and think about your timing, because to a child, that they might just be, to us, playing with a bit of Lego, but to that child, they've got some imaginative game in their mind and they're right in the middle of it. And it would be like, you know, us watching our favourite television programme and suddenly somebody coming, you know, in turning it off in the middle of that. So try, if you can, to plan things or give some warnings so that you're not suddenly stopping your child. As Barbara said, yeah, so we think about things, the way we give instructions might not be clear. So as Barbara said, don't be silly. So you don't know what your child might be doing, but they're doing something and you say to them, don't be silly. Whatever it is might not be silly to them. And so they carry on with what they're doing and then you feel really cross because you think to yourself, I've told them to stop doing it. but actually your child doesn't know what you've told them to stop doing, because to them it wasn't silly. So be clear. We also use words like, would you like to go to bed now? Would you like to tidy up your toys? Well, you're offering the child a choice, so they're perfectly within their rights to say, no, thanks. No, I don't want to tidy up my toys. No, I don't want to go to bed. Well, if offering a choice, we have to expect that response. So think about how you phrase things. If it's bedtime, then it's time for bed now, or I need you to get ready for bed. Don't offer a choice if there isn't one. And then something key that we often say, and actually a number of parents say that this does make a big difference, is if we shout an instruction through from the next room, we're very likely not to get a response. If we want our child to do something, we need to be in the same room, get down to their level, have eye contact if we can, and make sure that they've heard the instruction and follow through.
I have to say at this stage, if you think about it, if you're in the kitchen doing something and your child screams at you from the sitting room that they want a drink, would you respond?
I was going to say, Barb, was I think we're, you know, guilty of that as parents, aren't we? That we call through to our children, yeah, you know, get ready, but then we don't like it if they call through to us.
And it's not just the children. If anybody was to scream at me from another room that they wanted me to fetch them something, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
So why are we expecting different behaviour from our children?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thinking about kind of emotional messages that we might give our children. So it's really important that we separate the behaviour from the child. So if we say things to our children like, you're so stupid, you're naughty, it makes them feel bad about themselves. And when children feel bad about themselves and angry and resentful, then their behaviour deteriorates. So it's really important when we're giving messages to our children that we separate. So their behaviour may be unwanted or unacceptable or naughty, if you want to use that word, but they are not. It is the behaviour. Now we're moving on to look at punishments and the way we use these, and punishments, how punishments may not work. We tend not to use the word punishment so much now, do we, Bobs? We talk about consequences.
No, it's a consequence to a behaviour.
Yeah.
And consistency is really important in this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's key because, and again, I know that I did this. If we threaten a punishment, but we don't carry it out, the child learns that you don't really need it and they'll test you another time and continue to do that. And equally, if we issue a punishment or a consequence in anger, they're more likely to be quite harsh or inappropriate. And we then do have to sometimes retract, or we decide we've been too harsh, so we don't follow it through. So it's really important that if we do give a sanction to a child, we follow it through. If we do decide that we've been too harsh, it's okay to say to your child, I've actually had a think about it, and you can change it, as long as you don't do that in response to a child pestering, because again, then they learn that they can kind of change things around. But if you think about it and your child has accepted it, and then you think, actually, that was a bit harsh, it's okay to say to your child, I've thought about it and there is going to be a consequence. But I think I was a little bit harsh, and you can change it.
Equally, the importance of carrying that through once you've said it. If you don't carry it through, then it's really not worth it. I had the mother of a mother of three girls. The youngest girl was told to go to her bedroom and tidy up, and she went to her bedroom, but she didn't tidy up. So later, mum went upstairs and screamed and shouted and said, right, that's it. You're not going to the school disco on Friday, which really upset the youngest child. And she threw a bit of a tantrum. And one of the older girls come in and said, don't worry, You'll go to the disco. She's always said that to me, but I never missed a disco. So she still went to the disco anyway. So that was a completely useless consequence because she didn't really mean it. And that sends out a clear message to your children that you don't really mean what you say. And if you say something's going to happen, it usually, as a consequence, it usually doesn't happen. Therefore, it doesn't really matter.
Mm. Yeah. Thinking about us now a little bit and our beliefs and expectations as parents. So I think a common thing to think, and I know friends definitely said this to me when mine were young, was it's just a phase. And there is no doubt that, you know, things do come in phases with children often. And actually, if you don't respond, it may well change anyway. But the problem with thinking it's just a phase, it stops us dealing with it there and then and sort of helping our children learn how to behave. And problems can then become long-standing and more difficult to change. If we think children are doing it on purpose, that can make us very angry and more likely to overreact. Children are learning. They, you know, I'm sure undoubtedly sometimes children will do things on purpose because they know what buttons to push. But our job is to help them learn how to behave and not kind of just get angry thinking they're doing it on purpose. If we feel bad as a parent, so often parents will say to me, you know, it's my fault or I must have done something wrong. That makes us feel bad about ourselves. And when we're feeling bad about ourselves in the same way as children, it makes it harder for us to be patient and calm and consistent. It's a hard job. We all do our best and we don't get it right all the time at all. But be kind to yourself. Think about your expectations, what you're expecting of yourself and of your children. None of us are perfect, not us or our children, and it's unrealistic to expect it. And that can lead to disappointment and conflict. Our relationships with the other parent, with other people, can also have an influence. If we're feeling tense or angry, that can affect us. But equally, if the children witness that, that can affect how they behave as well. And quite often, children's behaviour will be related to how, if they're living in a household with lots of tensions, then their behaviour will show. And nearly at the end of this section, but then just thinking about influences outside the home that can have an impact. So obviously friends, the children's friends, your friends, in the same way that children watch and copy us, then they watch and copy people outside. School, obviously all the people at school in the same way, but also school work. If they're finding that hard and they're struggling, that can affect how they feel about themselves. If they feel they're not getting any praise or rewards for their efforts and they're not feeling great, then their behaviour might go down. And then the final one, which we're not going to go into in this because I think it's almost a whole another section, but is thinking about media and technology. And there's lots of resources on how you can keep your children safe online. And if anybody wants to get in touch, if they want to be directed to those. But I think, you know, they are probably fairly well known. But we're big believers that children should be watching age-appropriate stuff, playing age-appropriate games, that the age restrictions are there for a reason. And it has been shown that it has an impact on behaviour. So just be aware what your children are watching.
At the end of this presentation, there is a book list and there's an extremely good book called Assertive Parenting in a World of Screens. And it gives a whole heap of information on how to control what your children are watching on YouTube and other media outlets. So look out for that if that's a problem that you're currently struggling with.
Thanks, Barb. So I hope that's been helpful. And just giving you a little bit of pause for thought to see if any of those things are happening or have happened. We all do some of the things that we've discussed at one time or another. We're human. it can be a problem if those ways become your usual way of interacting with your child. How often it happens is far more important than simply whether it happens or not. You know, parenting is hard, we do our best, but just be aware how much of that's going on.
Now let's look at our relationships with our children, the home environment, and whether we make it clear to our children whether we are doing something that we like. Children are able to regulate their emotions better when they are in a secure and familiar environment. And although some things have understandably changed with the recent climate, we must keep sight of what family life feels like and what you can do, continue to do. This helps life to make life feel normal. We work together to organise your days, perhaps have a visual timetable, some with slots for mealtimes, homework and exercise. This the school day is very much punctuated by play times or break times or things like that. And replicating that at home can help enormously. Children respond very well to things happening, routines and things happening at the same time every day, so that they know what to expect. So we can work hard to maintain good routines, good sleep habits and boundaries. I often sort of said, well, it's a school holiday, so you can go to sleep a little bit later, you can go to bed a little bit later. It's not the school holidays, it's term time. And although they might not be at school, then we should be actually maintaining normal bedtimes and normal getting up times. Boundaries help keep children safe and they know what is expected of them. It doesn't mean they won't push against them. This is normal. But learning that these boundaries are firm and that you can keep to them gives them confidence in us as parents to keep them safe. Children don't like grey areas. They like black and white, right and wrong. And then they know where they stand because they know what's expected of them. Talk to your children. Provide opportunities for your children to share their thoughts and feelings. It is normal for us as adults to feel more anxious or irritable in difficult situations, and it's the same for children. Ensure that you are there to talk and to listen, and I mean really listen. Don't just be quiet whilst they're talking. Listen to what they're trying to convey to you. All behaviour is a communication, and if it's not possible at the time, tell your child when you will be available and stick to it. In 10 minutes, I can sit down with you and talk, or let's talk about this later in the day is ambiguous. It's vague. Let's talk about this after dinner narrows it down a bit. And that ensures the child that she or he will get your attention at one stage. Even if your child seems then happily engaged, ask them if they still want to talk. This demonstrates that you are interested and care about them. When listening, make sure that you use active listening. Put your phone and other distractions to the side. Get down to your child's level and sound interested, and summarise to check when you have understood. If your child is particularly anxious, set aside a time each day when they can discuss their worries. We call this worry time, and the only time it's a no-no is really just before bed, because if you talk about worries just before bed, the child will go to sleep worrying about what they've been telling you. But a usual time is maybe after dinner or before bath time or something like that. Just do it every day at the same time of the day, and the child will then learn that there is that space in the day when they can tell you what's worrying them. Allow them to focus on them all the time. Don't distract a conversation to something else, or, oh, I remember I did that when I was a child. Just listen to what the child has to say. We will be recording a specific course on helping anxious children in the very near future. So more detail on managing anxiety will be discussed there. Spend time with your child. Children crave our attention, and it helps them to learn and boost their self-esteem when we spend periods of time with our children. It does not need to be huge chunks of time, but a few minutes here and there throughout the course of a day demonstrates to the child that you are interested in them and what they're doing. With younger children particularly, playing together may be the best way of identifying any concern. All children benefit from one-to-one time to strengthen parent-child bond and boost a sense of self. If possible, aim for 10 minutes a day of special time when the play is interactive, child-led and positive. During this 10 minutes, have fun, no criticisms, no teaching, but attending fully to your child. Use plenty of praise and positive messages, e.g., I really enjoyed us colouring together today. It made me feel really happy and I'm looking forward to spending time with you again tomorrow.
Thanks. We're thinking now about managing, helping our children manage difficult feelings and behaviour. It can be helpful to normalise these feelings for children, because sometimes when children have big feelings, very angry, very worried about things, they think they're the only person that's ever felt like that. And to normalise it for them and to say everybody feels very anxious, worried at times, or everybody feels really angry at times, can just help them understand that these uncomfortable feelings are normal and that they will pass with time. And you can also help them understand that there may be some things they can do to manage these big feelings that perhaps have resulted in unwanted behaviour. Important thing to note here is when children are at that sort of high peak, when they're experiencing big emotions, it's hard to think rationally. So that is probably not the time to have the discussion with your child about how things could perhaps be done differently another time. It's more helpful to wait until they're calmer and time has passed, and then you can reflect with them on what happened, and if a similar situation arose again, what things might actually help them so that things haven't got out of hand, or they haven't, you know, hurt somebody because they've not known what to do with those big feelings. So it's helping them to also notice maybe some early signs of feelings erupting and to use some strategies in a timely fashion. So it might be, for example, that you notice, and parents have often said things like this, you notice that your child, so it might be, for example, that they start tapping a foot, and you have noticed in the past that actually they start tapping a foot and then very quickly that escalates into a huge eruption of anger. So if you can step in and help them recognise those signs, so I've noticed that when you tap your foot, you're starting to feel very distressed. Let's go, and then you find something to do with them there and then to try and stop it erupting. It's also helping them recognize those trigger things. We again, just as Barbara said about the anxiety program, we are going to very shortly be recording a program on anger, what it is, and how to manage it, and we'll go into that in much more detail about the assault cycle and how no point in speaking to your children at the top and some things you can do. But just briefly now, some strategies that may help children if you're helping them to manage those big feelings, some things that they might be able to do when they've got those big feelings is time out to calm down. We discuss that later on in here, so I'll just call it time out to calm down at the moment. Exercise, fantastic for children. Go outside, jump on the trampoline for 10 minutes or run around the garden, and then when you're feeling a bit calmer, you know, we can talk about it. Breathing techniques, very good as well, for adults and children. Or you might want to think about having some sort of calm down box for your child, so that when they are getting into the situation and you're recognising that they're getting these big feelings, you could have a box that they can use that will help soothe them and calm them down. It might be that you'll want to think about different senses, so not just some toys or whatever for them to focus on, but for example, if they really like the feeling of your dressing gown, for example, you could put the dressing gown belt in there so that they can stroke that. Or I love the smell of lavender and it does make me feel calm. You could have something for the child to smell, things that make them feel calm. But as I say, we talk about more about that in another session. Showing affection. It's really important to show affection to your children. It's very important for bonding and trust. And again, it shows them that you're interested and you care for them. It also helps them learn and feel comfortable with giving and receiving affection from those that they're close to. Not all children are the same, and not all children like the same sort of thing. So some children love a big hug and a squeeze. Other children don't. It's finding what they like and what they're comfortable with. So, if they're not big into cuddles, it could just be a high five or a pat on the shoulder, a tickle. It's important to have that bond and find out what your child's comfortable with. Were you going to add anything there, Barbs, or not? You were smiling.
No, it was just no.
Okay, thanks. We talk about using assertive discipline, and I think Barbara mentioned that earlier as well. You can let your child be their own person and still expect them to behave in a desirable way. So assertive discipline really means managing behaviour in a more positive and acceptable way. This is about acting straight away when your child misbehaves and trying to ensure that you react the same way each time and remain calm. When parents use assertive discipline, children learn to be responsible, become aware of their own needs and needs of others, and they learn to develop self-control. We've touched on this as well, but to mention again, have realistic expectations. Children individual and learn in different ways. No child is perfect all the time. I've got two boys, they're very, very different, and they did different things at different times, even though I think I parented them the same. So it's important not to compare your children and think, well, he did that then, or he's behaved in this way, why hasn't the other one? And problems can arise when we do that. If we expect too much or too little from children, it can make them feel resentful. So just be aware of your expectations and your expectations of yourself as well as parents. We learn through experience, and that's the important thing. The other vitally important thing, and I can't stress this enough, is looking after yourself as a parent. We've got the same needs as children do. We need to feel close to someone. We need to feel understood. We need to have time with friends and time for ourselves. Being a good parent does not mean that your child should take over your life. Parenting is easier when our own needs are being met, and we're more likely to be the sort of parent we want to be when our needs are being met, and be calm and patient. If possible, parenting's easier if you work as a team, when parents and carers support each other and agree to on how to manage misbehaviour. If you're going to use new strategies, discuss them beforehand with anybody that's in a caring role with your child, and avoid arguments in front of the child. So even if, and this is really hard, I've been there, but even if you disagree with the way that your partner or another carer is dealing with your child, don't discuss it in front of the child. Discuss it at a later stage when they're not around and agree the way forward. If a child sees that there's conflict between parents, that's very distressing and unsettling for them, but it also gives them a way in to play parents one off against the other. So try and talk about difficult issues when your child's not there. Get support. Find out, who can support you, whether that's professional support or just talking to your friends. Often I found this when mine were little, I thought it looked like everybody else was managing their children and their babies really well. And when I was brave enough to say, I'm really struggling with this, then you found out, oh yeah, me too, and the floodgates opened. So get support, talk to other parents, talk to family members.
We've actually said on so many occasions that the biggest value that people get out of our courses is actually talking to other people on the course.
Yeah.
And proving to themselves that they are not the only person going through this.
Yeah.
So everybody likes to put up the perfect facade of the perfect family, but actually, if you scratch the surface and you do find the confidence to actually say to a friend of yours that you are struggling with something in particular, then the chances are they've struggled with it as well.
Yeah.
And that is the biggest value that comes out of all of the parenting courses that we've done, is the interactions between those people that attend the course and find out that they're not alone.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Definitely. It, you know, we keep on saying it, but it is, it's a hard old job. And when you find out that actually other people are going through the same thing, it's just kind of like a load off your mind, and you're not alone. So yeah, absolutely. And then finally, in terms of looking after ourselves, now obviously this isn't possible at the moment, but take a break, or think about having a break if you can. As long as you've got somebody to look after your children that you trust and that you know that you're safe, all children, all parents need time away from the children. It's normal and it's healthy. So when we can, when we're back to those times, think about having a break every now and again. It certainly won't harm your child, and it will hopefully actually improve your relationship. Over to Barb's now.
Okay, so now we're going to look at managing the unwanted behaviour, and we're going to start with praise and criticism. So we'd like to ask you to take a moment to think about a time when somebody criticised you, and how that made you feel. Not particularly about what happened, but how it made you feel being criticised by somebody else. So emotions I feel when I am criticised: hurt, useless, humiliated, worthless, made to feel stupid. What was the point of trying? I feel sad. I won't do that again. This person doesn't like me. I want to be somewhere else. I want to cry. That's all the sorts of things that people would feel, have told us that they feel when they're criticised. So now, we'd like you to think about a time when you were praised and how you felt then. What emotion did that evoke in you, a time that you were praised? And again, this is things that people have told us they feel when somebody else has praised them. Happy, loved, warm inside. I will do that again. I feel valued, confident, and this person makes me feel good about myself. Now, there's two very valuable words in that list, and that is confident, because we want confident children, and we want our children to feel confident to face the rest of the world, because that is our role. And the other important one is, I will do that again. So if you praise your child, because these lists were generated by adults, but your children feel exactly the same. So when you criticise your children, that's the way your children will feel. When you praise your children, that's the way they will feel. They are no different from the rest of us. They are mini-me's. They have the same emotions and the same challenges that we have. So to praise them might make them think that they would do it again. So let's notice some of the key words: worthless and useless. What is the point in trying? When we feel like this, do we think our children do too? Definitely. Look at the praise feelings: proud, good about myself, I'll do that again. And there's that sentence again: I'll do that again. So she's tidied her Lego away and you've praised her for doing it, you'll get it again. And it's as simple as that. They feel exactly the same way we feel when we're criticised and when we're praised. We need to notice and praise our children when they are behaving in a wanted way. Children are programmed to want our attention, and they will behave in the way that gets them that attention most quickly, even that if that attention is negative. Negative attention is still attention. But we go back to the list of criticism. That is the way that negative attention will make them feel. If we give them positive attention, then you're going to make your child feel an awful lot better about themselves, happier, confident, and more valued. So if we tiptoe past without commenting when our children are behaving well, but rush in as soon as they start fighting, what do they learn? If we want mum or dad's attention, I need to behave badly. Therefore, it is vitally important that we look for the opportunities to praise our children. What you pay attention to, you get more of. Praise helps raise a child's self-esteem. It needs to be genuine and earned, but there should always be things to praise. Praise for doing. When children do things, for example, help tidy up, do their homework, but it's also a praise for being. For example, you're such a kind girl. You have the most beautiful smile. Praise should be descriptive where possible so that the child knows what the specific behaviour is that you liked and they are more likely to replicate. So rather than well done, you might say, well done for helping your brother put his shoes on. That was a very kind thing to do.
Yeah, I think we can't emphasise enough about praise and how important it is. Another helpful strategy that you might want to think about is having some ground rules or some family rules. These are rules that help children and us actually remember how we're expected to behave. So these rules apply to everyone, even the parents. We suggest that you have no more than four or five, and these rules need to be fair, easy to follow and positively phrased. Don't have to call them rules if you don't want to. So one family, let's say they were called Smith, they had displayed up on a board, in Team Smith we, and then they had the following rules, for want of a better word. So these are about how you want to be as a family and may well focus on some of the things that you might be struggling with. So for example, if you and the children frequently shout when you get angry, you might want to have a rule such as we use quiet voices, or we use kind voices, or we use quiet kind voices. You phrase it positively because we very much know that our brains focus on the main thing. So just as if we said to you, don't think about an elephant, you know, that kind of big grey thing comes into your mind. So you focus it on what you want rather than you don't want. So you phrase your rules positively. And yeah, as we say, no more than four or five. It can be helpful when you're thinking about family rules to maybe have a family meeting. It makes it sound a bit formal, but you might all decide to get round the table and talk about how you want to be. Everybody gets a chance to speak and nobody is made fun of. Even if you don't include all of everybody's thoughts, you acknowledge what they are. And the interesting thing is, in feedback from parents, I think time and time again, the one thing that children say is, I don't like you shouting. Do you agree, Bobs?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it comes up every time.
Yeah. And so, you know, you can learn from your children as well. So you would definitely have that as a rule. Write the rules up on a sheet of paper, get the children to decorate it, get everybody involved. And put it somewhere that they can be clearly seen. It serves as a really useful reminder for everybody about how you want to be as a family. And you can link those rules to rewards and consequences. We're going to discuss rewards and consequences next, so I'm not going to go into that in detail now. But if rules are broken, it serves as a useful reminder for you, as a useful way for you to remind your child. So, for example, if you did have, we use calm, quiet voices or kind, quiet voices, and one of them starts yelling at his brother, you can calmly say, remember our rules, we use kind voices. If the child is then able to stop shouting, you praise the child. So it's okay to give a reminder. And if they then change their behaviour, lots of praise and maybe a small reward, such as a marble in a jar, depending what systems you're using, which we'll discuss next. But if he doesn't and the behaviour continues, then you give a consequence, which you will have thought about in advance because you've got your rules. And when you make your rules, you also think about rewards and consequences. So it saves that kind of panic. Oh, my goodness, he's not done as I wanted him to. What am I going to say? What am I going to do now? You know, in advance. So, you know, it might be some time out or whatever. We're moving on now to talk about rewards and consequences.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. And that's a very good point, actually. The whole secret to all this is to be prepared to think about that this whole process makes you think about what your consequences are going to be if the rules are broken. These are important things. Don't run in the house we use kind voices, that sort of thing. And in making those rules, you automatically start to think about, well, what am I going to do if they don't follow the rules? So what you are subconsciously doing is building yourself a toolkit of ways to respond. And we've got a few suggestions coming up. But generally, rewards work better than consequences. And if a rule is broken despite a warning, then the consequence can be given. Generally, consequences work better if they are related to the behaviour, e.g. if fighting over what to watch on TV, then you turn the television off for 10 minutes and then switch it back on. Maybe using a problem-solving approach, for example, you were fighting because you wanted to watch different channels. So what do you think that we could do to solve this? Hopefully they will agree that one of them can finish the programme they were watching and then the other can choose. But if the fighting starts again, the television goes off for a longer period, and if the consequence is given, it is important that you then move on. Try not to add in other consequences or continue to raise the misdemeanor. Tomorrow is another day. If the consequences is a later time, e.g. going to bed early, then the child behaves beautifully for the rest of the day. The reward can be given for the behaviour, but the consequence should stay in place. Rewards can work very well to motivate children and to encourage new behaviours to become habits. There are many reward systems: charts, pasta in jars, marbles in jars, as Sarah said, pebbles, tick charts, sticker charts. There's so many options. And if you think you're going to struggle with this, make it a small period of time. Like you could go for a day. If fighting is a constant problem in your house, go for a day with no fights, then you have a reward at the end of the day. But generally, we would say go for a week. But that's during a time when a child's day is broken up by getting up, by going to school, by coming home, and things like that. And days are pretty much similar at the moment. So it might be worth for you to consider to do something very small at the end of the day. Pasta in a jar or marble in a jar is brilliant, because then at the end of the week that you can reward it in some way. So Mumsnet is a very good place to look for reward charts, and I'm sure that you will find something that interests your child. There's rockets, there's lions, there's all sorts of things ready printed out. You can just print them straight off the internet. Rewards don't have to be material. A special time, nicely tonight, then we'll see about baking some cakes with mum in the morning, or a time activity with a parent often works really well. In the case of girls, you could do pamper nights. In the case of boys, maybe they could do a bike repairing session with their father or another male that's in their life. If using charts, don't use sad faces or crosses or days of the week, because it's very obvious then that the child has failed to do that, and can lead to disengagement. I remember one family who had a little lad that was wet the bed, and they used ticks for the days that the bed was dry in the morning, and they used crosses for the days that the bed was wet in the morning. And I never forget going into their kitchen for a whole month. There was all of these ticks up and one big cross. Just the one, but it was the only thing that everybody saw. And I just thought that was so sad, because the cross seemed so much more bigger than all the ticks. And I saw was this great big cross sticking out of this.
Inevitably, just human nature, somebody visiting will say, oh dear, what happened on that day then?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just human nature to focus on that negative, great big cross. So smiley faces or ticks, and if they don't achieve, then it's nothing. You just don't put anything up. And the other thing that we could do is a family reward system, family kindness charts, for example, starry skies. It's interesting that Sarah's asked me to tell you about starry skies, but it really is such a good idea. So there's no targets, there's no expectations, there's just a piece of blank paper. A piece of A4 paper will be fine, and a packet of silver or gold stars, or both, or any coloured stars, it's irrelevant. But the starry sky is a family reward system where everybody joins in. So it gets families to notice the nice things that people do for each other. So mum cooks a really nice tea. So somebody can say, that was a lovely meal, thank you, and give them a star. Brother to sister, dad to daughter, any combination can give any member of the family, even the dog, even if the dog came back when he was called, give him a star. And at the end of the exercise, and you decide when that is, you can decide when that starry sky is full of stars, then you plan a family treat. And it just gets people into the habit of noticing the kind acts that people do for each other. And by noticing and giving stars and rewarding that behaviour, then you tend to get more of it. So we all like to be rewarded for our efforts. And remember, what you pay attention to, you get more of.
Yeah, absolutely. And following on from that, then, in terms of what you pay attention to, you get more of. In the same way, if you don't pay attention to something, then that should result in that behaviour becoming less and less and stopping. So we call this planned ignoring. And this can be used for sort of minor irritating behaviour. We're obviously not suggesting that you use ignoring for the more dangerous behaviour, such as hitting and hurting each other. So perhaps it's best illustrated by two kind of quite good examples where this has worked well, were given to us by parents on courses that we've run. So in the first example, the family was sitting down for dinner, as they did every night, but one of the children was running around, hiding under the table, wouldn't come and sit down, generally mucking about. The parents said that usually they would have focused on that child and told them off or got into an argument about it. And generally it would have been, you know, very uncomfortable. And even if they'd achieved the result of the child sitting down at the end, everybody would have been het up and fraught throughout dinner. So instead, she decided to ignore the behaviour of the child running around and not focus on that, but instead focus on the child that was sitting down. And she praised her for sitting nicely. The other child then quickly sat down and then also received praise. And, you know, that I thought that was a lovely example. And in fact, they use that in school a lot. You'll see, you know, the children are sitting down on the carpet, and there's always a couple of children at the, you know, running around at the back or fidgeting or doing something. And the teachers don't draw attention to that, but they say things like, well done, Johnny, for sitting so nicely with your arms folded. And you suddenly see all the children fold their arms and sit nicely because they, you know, they want that praise. So it's always worth thinking about ignoring. Do try and remember, though, that if you're going to praise your child, so in that example that I've given you, when the child then sat down and earned praise, it's important not to follow a positive with a negative. So the temptation, certainly in my world, I think, would have been to have said something like, well done for sitting down. It's a shame you didn't do it immediately, I asked you. But just in the same way, if you think about a scenario, I always say this to you, don't I, Barbs? If I said to Barbara something like, you look really nice today, Barbs, it's a shame that you can't always make an effort like that. Which bit do you focus on? We remember the negative bit, don't we? We don't remember that, oh, Sarah thinks I look really nice today. Yeah. So remember not to follow a positive with a negative. Just stick to giving the praise as soon as the child changes their behaviour. The second example was a child, I think this was the first ever parenting course that I ran when I, with Barbara, when I started the job six and a half years ago. So in the second example, a child was making noises at mealtimes. I remember the mum saying, it's driving me absolutely mad. He's just making these noises when we all sit down to dinner. She tried telling him off. She tried removing him from the table. And it was just, he was still doing it. As it wasn't a dangerous behaviour, we suggested that she simply ignore it. When you are ignoring, you need to be careful that your facial expression or your body language doesn't convey that actually you are very aware and very irritated. You just need to carry on, no facial expressions, don't pay any attention, and don't convey any irritation. At the end of the course, we asked mum, you know, how the mealtimes were going and was her son still making noises? And I remember her saying, oh, I'd completely forgotten about that. I'd completely forgotten. She said that stopped a while ago as soon as I started ignoring the behaviour. So it can work really, really well.
Absolutely. It's also very important that when you're asking your child to do something that you give clear instructions. It is important to give children instructions that are clear and direct, and to make the make sure the instruction is followed. However, it's not always reasonable to insist on instant obedience. When you want your child to do something, try to let them finish what they are doing at that time. However, if a problem behaviour is occurring, act immediately. And when you want your child to stop doing something, when you want your child to do something, follow these steps. Get close and gain attention. And that means go down on your hunches and get to eye level, then that's what you do. Make sure you're in the same room as them and face-to-face contact. Tell your child what you want them to do. For example, wash your hands, it's time for dinner. And then give them time to cooperate. So give your child a couple of minutes to cooperate and put down what they're doing and go to wash their hands. If they do, then you praise them for doing the right thing. A strategy that can be useful is when and then. The then needs to be positive so that the child will enjoy it. So, for example, when you've done your homework, then it's time for bed, may not get the desired response. Whereas when you've done your homework, then we can have a game together, should be more of an incentive. In the same way, you can use choices and consequences, just as we adults do. Children like to have some control in their lives. Using choices and consequences gives the child some control, but guided by you. So you present the choice that you want them to make with the positive outcome, and the less desirable choice with no positive outcome. So, for example, you could do your homework now, and then we will have time to play a game together. Or you can do your homework when you have finished rolling around, and then I will be cooking tea and it will be too late for a game. You choose.
Yep, can work very powerfully. I think the final sort of a thing we're going to discuss in terms of managing misbehaviour is time out. We call it time out to calm down, or indeed time in. So this can be a really useful strategy in helping children learn how to regulate their emotions. In the past, time out was used more as a sort of punitive strategy. I don't know if any of you ever watched Super Nanny or anything like that, but it was very much in terms of you've misbehaved, you'll go and sit on, well, they actually even called it the naughty step. You'll go and sit on the naughty step and have some time out. You know, calling it the naughty step in any case makes a child feel that they are naughty, which is not what we want. It's the behaviour that's naughty. But things seem to have moved on very much more now, and we're much more using time out, if you use time out, as a way for a child to learn how to calm down, or time in. And I'll talk more about that. But what we're wanting is we're wanting children to understand what's happening to them and their bodies when they're feeling like that, and helping them regulate. So you explain to a child that they need some time out to help them calm down. Now, some children do prefer to be on their own, and actually the parents' presence can inflame things even further. One family that I worked with just before lockdown very much found that if they went to try and talk to the child, that just inflamed things and escalated it again. The child very much needed to be on their own. And then once he had had enough time, he would come down and say, I'm okay now. But other children, using separation when they're already distressed and got very high emotions, can be unhelpful. So you might then find that time in is actually what helps your child regulate most best of all. Remember that those emotions are going to be running very high, so that's not the time that you're going to discuss anything, but you sit with your child. And again, it's finding out what helps your child. Some children, when they're very distressed and emotions are running high, a tight holding hug can really help. For other children, they don't want to be touched, but you might just sit beside them, and you might explain that your emotions have been running very high, you're feeling het up too, so let's sit here and focus on some breathing techniques, for example. So we need to make sure that we're modelling it. So we might say something like, I'm starting to feel very hot, and I know when I start to feel hot, I'm getting angry. So I'm going to find somewhere quiet and take some deep breaths. Your child might come, you might suggest that your child comes along with you and does that, but you are modelling it. And if your children see you modelling it, they're more likely to replicate that.
So we hope that some of that's been helpful. It's really just a start. We have lots of resources and ideas, far too many to list in a short session like this. But we are running a live session on Thursday, the 18th of June, where you can join us to ask any questions and discuss any ideas. Our email addresses and phone numbers are also at the end of this presentation. So do not hesitate to contact us if you think that we can be of any help. We've also put up some websites and reading material if you would find any of that helpful. And we hope that this has been some use to you.
Remember that you as parents are really important. We're all human and none of us gets it right all the time. Be kind to yourselves, make sure that you are using self-care strategies, and take advantage of this time together, but also try and make sure that you have some time on your own. We very much look forward to you joining us on the 18th. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.